And welcome to the More Than Just a School podcast by Roots to Roots Academy. My name is Karina Thomas Reynolds, and with me is my dear friend, Ramya Seladurai.
In this series, you will learn about the issues that are plaguing our education system today.
You will also receive tips and tricks on how to leverage your child's education to prepare them for the future.
So let's get started. Welcome to episode 9 of More Than Just a School podcast. And in this episode, we'll be talking about mental health and honestly, the impacts it has on our students. It's interesting. It's been a topic that we've been touching upon throughout More Than Just a School podcast. It's been something that has been coming up throughout all of our episodes, and I just felt like it's a long time coming.
Yeah.
So let's start here. It's interesting because what were your experiences as a student? And do you feel like that has influenced your work ethic? Do you think that in a way has made you thrive for something when it was difficult for you as a student to achieve that yourself?
It's interesting. As a student, I never thought about my mental health.
Does anyone? I feel like that's something, I guess, we never really even considered. It was always like pushed through.
Right.
My mom, I was talking to her that I see a therapist, and she's like, why? Like, it's something that they don't understand. They're like, whenever something happens, you know, tough it out.
Right.
Even till this day, she thinks that, like, we're super soft.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I don't think she's wrong, but I think it's, I think it's because we are more connected to our emotional side.
Right.
And I don't think that means that you're soft, but it's more so you allow yourself to understand what your body's telling you.
Right.
And I think in a way it's good. So I guess there's changes to that.
Right. And I think that context is everything. And we both come from immigrant families where within those cultures, the idea of mental health is not an idea.
No.
You know, it's very much a, frankly, sometimes they say that it's a white people problem.
Yeah.
And that, you know, saying that you're depressed, like, what are you sad about? Especially in the context of Black people.
I know.
When you have ancestors who have gone through slavery, it's like, what exactly are you, what exactly are you upset about? When
yeah.
you are in this first world country, you have all the opportunities, you have a roof over your head, food in your belly,
mm-hmm.
what are you complaining about?
And I think in a weird way, it's like the pressures that we feel now is different. And I feel like they didn't have the time to feel depressed. It was more so survival.
Right.
And I think when survival kicks in, you don't have the time to think about your emotions. You're like, I need to live. I don't know if I'll be there tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now that we have the security that we will be here, it's like, what am I going to do?
Right.
And I think that's like the next step that everyone's feeling.
Yeah.
My mom, she tells me, she's like, Ramya, there's so much that I could be depressed about, but I just don't think about it. And I think that's such an interesting way of going about it. It's like, avoid your thoughts, avoid your emotion, or avoid the problems you have been dealt with so that you don't feel that way.
Right.
So it's like, we are now in a state of how to deal with these emotions,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not is it better to not think about it or to deal with it and then see a therapist.
Yeah.
Or see a professional to help you with
or
it.
Or seek God. Or Allah or Krishna.
Or, yeah, and someone, something.
That's another thing as well. It's like we would be also a little bit naive to not consider the impacts of kind of being in a more a religious society and the taboos that come around believing in a higher power, not saying that it's bad to be atheist, but just allowing space for people to be religious within the parameters of still respecting the human rights of other people.
Right. Yes.
those things aren't together. They're mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
When I think about my experience as a student, it was very much like what you described. It was pushing through at all cost. So that's why as a teacher, I have to admit, and I feel bad for saying this, but sometimes I do reflect on my experiences, but I have to consistently tell myself that the times that I had are very much different
mm-hmm.
than what they've experienced. And to hold students at the same standard as the generations 10 years ago, I just don't think that it's fair. The the role that social media is playing is an impact. The technological advances that we've had are a big impact. The pandemic as well. And I would even say some of the other factors, like cannabis being legalized and that being more accessible to youth. I just think that there are a lot of things that have changed over the last 10 years, and you would need to consider all of those factors instead of just looking at them and saying, why are you complaining about finishing this assignment at this date when it was back in my day?
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to have extensions and you would just receive a zero. Like, but maybe back in our day, that was a cruel response, and therefore we have adjusted and evolved. Yeah. So
it's interesting. I felt like I would never turn out to be my parents, but it's weird that we have because like, they look at us and they're like, y'all soft. And then now we look at our students and be like, y'all soft. But I think it's the idea of everything kind of coming to an order, and we don't have these sacrifices that we need to make. And then we have time to think about ourselves and to think about if I genuinely like what I'm doing and think about our future. And I think that's where it comes down to, like, taking it in stride.
Yeah.
Being able to think about, what do you choose to do now? What do you choose to do tomorrow? And let's take it from there. It's this idea of knowing what you want to do, want to be in the next 10 years that gets them anxiety and have them feel these certain ways that makes it difficult to navigate the system. And honestly, teachers are not equipped with it. I don't even think the schools are equipped with it. In my knowledge, you guys have a curriculum you have to teach within a certain amount of time. And I think in a weird way, it's like, okay, we're going to give you extra time to finish it. But it's never actually finding out the reasons behind why they're struggling. Honestly, they're struggling. It could be because of the academics and it could be difficult. But a lot of it could be the fact that they are feeling anxious, they're feeling depressed, they're having all these other mental health issues that are probably making them feel like they can't complete it in the amount of time that they have.
And it's hard for you to know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest part, is that it's not a lack of wanting to fix things, but, you know, if I'm even thinking about myself as a teenager, I wasn't open about what was happening in my home life with the teacher. Culturally, it was something that was, I think, taboo as well. We just dealt with things in the home.
Yeah.
And we didn't confound school life with home life. And what we're seeing more and more now is more of an openness, because we are definitely seeing now that school became a part of home life and those intersected intimately.
Yes.
Then we had no choice but to change how we looked at how home situations are linked to academic achievement.
And in a weird way, for the parents as well, to see how they're learning, how they are achieving the goals, and how they are taking the materials and implementing it in their homework, it's something that has become very much more intimate. And again, it kind of goes back to the idea of, like, you have everything in the internet. How hard could it be for you to learn something now? Like, you have so many resources, but it's like, another big part of what I think students are learning, and I'm learning, is knowing when to reach out and how to reach out and who to reach out to.
Right.
I think that's also another big problem. It's taking that step of being like, I need help, and actually being able to say that.
Yes.
And then realizing and taking those steps forward. Because once you realize you need help and then you actually tell someone about it, God, it does change everything, because then they're able to provide you solutions. Or maybe saying that you need help allows them to find help for you. It's not just allowing yourself to suffer in pain, but allowing someone else to help you for it. Oh man, it's, I have to say, like, reaching out to someone allowed me to get that stability to be like, okay, maybe I'm doing the right thing, because you're getting someone else's opinion of being like, okay.
You're
on the right track, or you got the right resources, or you're able and capable of finding the resources you need to succeed.
Right.
So a student should feel confident and feel, I don't know, like you're capable. Yeah, empowered to be able to find that.
Yeah. I wanted to kind of double back to a point that you were making earlier, just like talking about being the children of immigrant parents. Because I think that this is a problem, and it's not just within our communities, mm-hmm. but within many cultural communities. It's just when we come from the families we did, and not saying that this is every immigrant story, mm-hmm. but, you know, I think it's very much close to Pavlov's hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. And with, like, the basic level being your psychological needs, like water, food. And then once you have that met, then safety needs, mm-hmm. like having your personal safety, employment.
House.
And keeping in mind that the people... our family, our ancestors before us, some of them never got past that.
Yeah.
So the idea of reaching the next level of love and belonging, of esteem, of self-actualization, those ideas weren't even met because they were stuck at employment. They were stuck at...
Necessities. Yeah.
So it's like... it's a generational shift mm-hmm. that a lot of, I would say, like, first, second generation Canadians are facing. And also, it's impacting our students as well, because they're also seeing a shift of, well, these aren't problems that I had. Mm-hmm. And how come you're having these problems when, like, things are better? Like, you're not growing up as rough as I did. Mm-hmm. But really trying to get out of that mindset of just... really realizing that the privilege of having those basic needs met has allowed your child
to develop
in those ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never knew this was a thing, but at least it gives me reason to believe in the things that I thought. Because when my mom mentioned those things, even now, she was just like, Ramya, you know, I've always wanted to travel. What have I, like, really experienced? And it's funny because maybe she sees it with TikToks, or maybe she sees it with myself traveling the world. She's like, you're so lucky, you're able to, like, travel before you get married and this and that. I'm like, Mom, I'm happy you're able to even think that way now. Mm-hmm. Before, you never even had the ability to think about travel. That right. was never something you ever thought of. You thought right. of just survival, getting your kids in school, our mortgage met, this and that. And now that you want to be able to travel and feel confident in the ability that you have to meet your daily needs, mm-hmm. you've grown. Yes. And I told her, I'm like, you've grown, and I want you to feel proud about that. Like, now you're moving on towards the next step. And it's like your Pavlov's theory of, like, moving up yeah. that ladder.
Yeah.
And, like, these students they have the bottom two, maybe even three met. Now they're moving up mm-hmm. to the self-actualization of, what is it that is meant to be me? What legacy am I going to leave behind? Which I feel like a lot of us are feeling. And I think yeah. everyone in our generation is wondering as well.
Right.
What is it that we're going to leave behind? Because that's something we want to do. Mm-hmm. It's no longer we live, breathe, and die.
Yeah. But you, in a way, I don't know if you feel this way too, but you don't want the efforts of the people who came before you to be for nothing.
Yes.
And so it's like... that extra, I'm going to use the word pressure, mm-hmm. To be intentional and to make the most of the time that we have here to create the changes and to push for the things that we know our ancestors were pushing for too, and to create that world that will help students not deal with these mental health challenges and to feel that sense of belonging and to self-actualize.
Feeling sad and lonely? Not sure who you can turn to? Beanbag Chat is an app where young adults aged 16 to 29 can receive free, safe, and engaging support from a professional mental health counselor.
Beanbag Chat is customizable so that the services are culturally relevant to their population.
This can be a great alternative if you and your child are needing extra support and navigating mental health challenges.
You can access their services in the link below. And now, back to our regular schedule program.
And that's the thing, I think, as the system that was created during our time, it was made to reach these necessities of ground two, of finding employment. But now people and students are trying to find what those other levels are. And I think ultimately education needs to reflect those other points that students are looking for.
Yeah.
They're like learning math, they're learning English, they're learning French, but they're trying to figure out how does this relate to me?
Yeah.
How does this make me feel?
Yeah.
And I think those are parts that we need to incorporate so that students feel a sense of belonging in their studies.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love that point you just made. Yeah. No, I never thought about it that way. But yeah, our education system was just like preparing us for
employment.
Not necessarily to be the best of ourselves, but yeah. rather to just be a good citizen.
Yeah.
Which is to have a job and to not depend on the government.
And honestly, it's funny. Like, I don't know. Maybe a lot of people haven't realized this yet. Maybe the government hasn't realized this yet. And it's like, we have evolved in a way where those two first levels are met. So let's move forward. Let's change it.
Right.
Let's make a difference. And I think that's what we're trying to incorporate in our courses at Richards Academy. It's making this curriculum in a way relevant to our students so they can see that actualization for themselves,
yeah.
to relate this course to themselves in a way that makes them feel they belong.
Right. And it's like, it's so funny that you mentioned that because I do feel a sense of fear as well about the direction of the education system, because for both of us, education was our means to move up the social ladder,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to go from lower class citizens to being mid
and high, hopefully.
And hopefully. We'll see. Still playing the lottery. But eventually working towards being upper class citizens, not there yet,
yeah.
but dreaming. And so when education is something that is inaccessible, when education is something that people aren't investing in, I think that we all should be looking at them not investing in lower class families and even low middle class families, so that children can have the social capital, can have the knowledge in order to gain that job, in order to work out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have an education system that isn't investing in public education, in a free education,
mm-hmm.
and when it's almost becoming forced for students to reach that self-actualization point through private school, then we've failed. We've failed. And so I guess the question is, what is being done, right, of fixing this problem?
Yeah.
I do want to draw up a few stats.
Please.
Okay. I'll start off by saying this. So the way that public schools address mental health issues, it's a community approach. It's not like it's down to the individual teacher, but it's the education support workers, QP, who are part of ensuring that students can have that extra support outside of the classroom. Because let's be honest, if I'm a French teacher teaching a student how to conjugate ER verbs, you know, it would be nice to address mental health issues, but when you're needing to rush through a curriculum and address academic needs, it's hard to juggle the emotional needs of a child if they need more support with other than the time that you spend with them within an hour and 15 minutes in a high school classroom. And so in classes, in schools, they have a lot of in-school resources like psychologists, social workers, child youth workers, and also sometimes other professionals to support mental health for cultural communities like Indigenous communities, Tamil communities, Black communities, Muslim, etc. And so having a more culturally responsive approach to mental health in a way that resonates. I mean, it would be ideal if that was accessible everywhere,
mm-hmm.
But not always.
And so this is being offered where?
So it's, I mean, that's the problem.
Okay.
It's not being offered everywhere. It's inconsistent.
I see.
And what they're actually finding is that in more rural areas in Ontario, that's where the support are really lacking, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe in more urban cities, Toronto, like Markham, etc., like they have more robust supports, but that hasn't been expanded elsewhere. So that's why you have organizations like People for Education who are asking for them to look at that financial model to better support French language schools and rural schools so that they have these support workers like psychologists, child youth workers, etc.
So interesting you mentioned this. I think this is awesome that they're doing. I think there's just more research that needs to be done because it makes sense for it to be in some places because those schools may be at a place where this is relevant to them. But then maybe in other schools, there is probably a form lower that is required for them to bridge that gap, mm-hmm. to allow the students to actually reach for these people, mm-hmm. to ask for that help. Because I find a lot of these schools that maybe are not as privileged would need that extra push and understanding and confidence of how to ask for help. And a lot of these resources, when they're being offered, they're not being used. Mm-hmm. And I find that there's a gap between these students and understanding on how to ask for help.
And parents as well. Parents as well. Allowing the space to do that. Yeah. Because there's still that stigma. And I think that it's important to note, like, social distrust, which is valid when mm-hmm. we hear about the stories of Black and Indigenous students who... I mean, just period. I don't know. Just the history of Black and Indigenous students in Ontario, the history of segregation, of residential schools. Like, how do you trust that speaking about the vulnerable experiences that you're having in a school will be adequately handled? That takes time. And I think that a lot of parents and communities might not be there because of this history and because of their own personal experiences with the education system.
And, like, for all of the minority students who have left a country, their parents have left a country to create a new life here and having those pressures of needing to meet those standards that have been met because your family has left everything behind so that you can get that better life. So meeting up with those pressures and constantly fearing that you are not good enough because they have sacrificed everything for you. Mm-hmm. And then having parents kind of breathing that down your back sometimes. Yeah. So
it creates like
a pressure cooker where it does explode.
Mm-hmm. When we're looking at the services offered in schools, I do want to make sure that we're painting a more adequate picture because mm-hmm. it's not like every school has a psychologist or a social worker or a child youth worker. And these stats were taken back in 2019. Mm-hmm. 30% of elementary schools and 36% of secondary schools report having regularly scheduled access to a psychologist, which is a decline from 38 and 40% respectively in 2017.
So they pulled back.
Yeah. And then also 22% of elementary and 21% of secondary schools report having no access to a psychologist, nearly double the proportion that reported 5 years ago. 48% of elementary and 44% of secondary principals report having access to an on-call psychologist. So that's a psychologist on a needs basis. Mm-hmm. And among schools with regular access, psychologists spend an average of 4.2 hours per week in elementary schools and 5.5 hours per week in secondary schools, which is not a lot of time.
No, it isn't. And that's per psychologist or just in general?
Just the average of a psychologist.
If you think about an hour session per child, that's like five students.
Yeah.
And like the people who go are usually regulars.
Right. And The stats are better with social workers, and I think that's what I've seen more in my experience. I could be wrong, but I don't remember ever meeting a school psychologist in my experience. But I have met school oh yeah. Oh my god. I have met school social workers. 48% of elementary and 80% of secondary schools report having regular access to a social worker. So they are a lot more prevalent in secondary schools.
Okay, good.
And 14% of elementary and 10% of secondary schools report having no access to a social worker. So we see the stats are better with this. In high school, they average at about 16.3% in a week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot better. But we see similar stats between a child youth worker and a psychologist, where we see that they're not as present at that level. But they do spend more time in schools than a psychologist. And the reason why a psychologist would be important during this day and age, because we are seeing a very big increase in individual education plans, in individual learning plans, to ensure that we're teaching in a way that is differentiated, meaning tailored to the individual student and to accommodate their exceptionalities and learning needs. And that takes a psychologist, because sometimes it's linked to ADHD or a bipolar disorder. It's just very multifaceted. So by having an in-school psychologist, it could allow that process to be more seamless. As of right now, it does appear that parents and guardians have to speak to institutions outside of the school in order to access that information.
It's honestly really good that schools are providing these resources, because a lot of students, yeah, like you said, like students that have these learning challenges are now part of classrooms where students don't have them at all. So they would need that extra help, and a psychologist and these social workers will definitely be able to bridge that gap for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the real question here is, how many of them actually ask for help?
I think that the number of IEPs and ILPs is very much dependent on the demographic and socioeconomics of a community.
You think there's more of them in white neighborhoods?
I would say that white communities have normalized needing accommodations more than ethnic communities. It's just like when you have certain communities who just understand how to work the system, and that is like intergenerational knowledge that has helped you understand the system.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily that they're doing something to handicap themselves, but rather
to leverage
the system. And you can't fault those communities for doing what they need to do in order to survive. And that's why we have this podcast, is raising awareness and looking at how other communities are leveraging the system in order to help their children succeed. And one of the ways that it is happening is through these IEPs and ILPs that is allowing for additional time for students, that's allowing for reduced tasks for assessments and evaluations, use of technology, etc. And I'm not saying that like these students don't need those accommodations, but I am saying that in the schools that I've worked in, it is normalized to have these. It's not really, it might be a little bit stigmatized, but not really, because there's such a great number of students who use them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as if within our cultural communities, we're not quite there yet. Like, we still have this fear of our children being labeled in this way, because there's that fear that that will hinder their progress. Which is fair, because what helps the white community, you know, in a system that was built to help this community,
mm-hmm,
and not really built to help minority communities, it's like, I think it's fair to be apprehensive about this. But with it being so prevalent, I think it's ought to be time that our communities let go of that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And trust that if that is mishandled, that you have the resources and the support to fight.
If your child needs this help, by all means, knowing that these are options for your students in order for your children to survive and, mm-hmm, to get the help that they need, all for it. All for it. But I think there is a belief amongst our people that says, if we were able to survive all of this that has happened before us, we can survive this too. It's almost, mm-hmm, like survival of the fittest at this point.
Yeah.
Where we are capable of doing more than just surviving off of these additional resources that are being given as an advantage. It's more so believing in your own capabilities, and right, I think that's what that is. Whereas when it comes to a point where you are labeling your child, which is true, you are labeling your child, doesn't that make them feel less than? And then in a way, it kind of goes back to the tutoring aspect. Oh, you need help? Let's find a tutor. Oh, you need help? Let's label you IEP. Like, it hinders them. It subconsciously makes them feel that they are incapable.
Mm-hmm.
When maybe, potentially, they are.
Mm-hmm.
But just pushing for these resources for a government to give.
Mm. I think I hear what you're saying. Is that rather, what we've decided was that we've labeled the problem on the child.
Yeah.
Whereas we haven't fixed the problems in the system so that that child doesn't need to have that plan in the first place.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because if our first instinct is like, oh, you're not able to sit still, IEP. It's like, but are we looking at the way that we're instructing? Are we looking at the in-school supports? I hear what you're saying. It's like, once again, like tutoring, instantly we're saying, get a tutor because you don't get it. Instead of being like, what's the ways that you learn best and how do we create an environment where you learn best and allowing the environment to adjust to the child as opposed to the child adjusting to the world.
And honestly, it's weird. We labeled this episode mental health, but I'm like thinking more and more. It's like, are we labeling it so that we are saying the problem is the child once again? Now we have moved on in this progression of, okay, we have our necessities, we have our employment, we have the studies that we need in order for employment. Now let's move on towards actually emotionally connecting with these studies.
Yeah.
We're calling it mental health, but are we not providing the actual studies that reflect what the students need at this moment?
Yeah.
We're calling it mental health, but we are not realizing there's a gap between what we're teaching and what the students need.
Facts. Because what happens now are the mental health initiatives are like Bell Let's Talk days, but not actually like the implementation of what the scholars are saying and recommending, of the implementation of the
Pavlov's theory, honestly.
Yeah, it's
I feel like we're very backhand answering these solutions by saying, hey, the students are feeling this way, let's fix those problems, when really we're fixing the symptoms. Mm-hmm. We're fixing the headache.
Mm-hmm.
When we should be fixing the fact that they're dehydrated.
Right.
We need to fix the curriculum. Root. We need to fix the root. Yeah. We've moved forward in the way we've evolved. Let's move with it.
Yeah.
We're regressing here.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, because I guess it's like, it would be naive of us if an education system that was meant for assimilation wasn't still forcing assimilation. I don't know. Yeah, you've given me food for thought of just like how these mental health, push for accommodations in mental health, like it feels impossible because they create that IEP and I look at it and I can't accommodate for that in a class of 30.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it feels stupid.
Mm-hmm.
It feels stupid because they're like, this student needs one-on-one support. And I'm like, yeah, I see that. And I want to do that. But I can't. So, like, when you think, one of my friends said, you know, to professeur, pas magicienne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a teacher, not a magician.
Yeah. Essentially, it's kind of like the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
We've had hospitals. We had an influx of citizens who needed help. What do? We hired more doctors. What do? We hired more nurses. What do? We asked people to isolate. We found a way to mitigate the situation. There's going to be a time where all of our students are going to come to a standstill and they will fall.
Mm.
What are we going to do then?
Yeah.
We need to hire teachers that are capable of teaching students in a classroom of 15, max 15.
Mm-hmm.
Because hiring these social workers, hiring these people who would help them with their IEPs is not the solution.
Yeah.
It's actually having teachers that can be in those one-on-one situations with these students.
So that we're not needing to lean on additional support as much. Yeah.
And having a curriculum that helps them understand where they fit in this society.
Right. Because even right now, like, we're not even meeting the basic needs. We used to have morning snack programs. So that if we had students who didn't have breakfast, they were able to just have a bite to eat for the beginning of the day. That's been canceled. Right now, we don't even have food options in the cafeteria. So they're forced to go to other places. And we know that food restaurants prices have gone up. So it's just like, we're not even able to meet the basic food needs right now. And of course that impacts mental health as well, because that's a part of the basic necessities. And if you're hungry, if you had to go to extra help sessions at lunch and you didn't have time to grab lunch because you would have had to leave the school in order to grab food, I don't know, we've just made education more inaccessible. We haven't adjusted, and
there is no one curriculum that fits all. And I think that's the problem that we're having right now. Some areas need more employment-based curriculum. That's true, and that's fair. Because some are needing that in order to survive. But some others who had the privilege of not needing to worry about those two stages need to have a curriculum that's more catered towards them. And I'm not saying AP, I'm not saying IB, I'm not saying immersion. I'm saying in a more emotional connection.
Yeah, they call it social emotional learning. It's like the push that they're trying to do. I think I mentioned in the new grade 9 curriculum, they've incorporated that. In elementary, they're trying to phase that in a little bit more, of having students being able to understand their emotions, to regulate it. But that has to be more culturally relevant as well, depending on different communities, because that looks different in different communities.
And it also just sounds like they're trying to solve the headache here. They're bringing this in so you can understand your emotions. But they're not bringing this in to interweave it with the curriculum to understand where you belong in this curriculum.
What do you mean by that?
There is parts of this that I find that is still unknown.
Yeah.
Even myself, I feel like there is a gap that needs to be met. But I'm thinking that it is a curriculum that not only teaches you math, but teaches you what you...
Well, where you belong.
Where you belong, like what you enjoy. And I'm saying, like, not only careers, but knowing what you as a person feel.
Yeah.
And understanding your roots,
mm-hmm.
and knowing what you harness as a power. I'm saying this now as a 27-year-old who enjoys talking about social emotional connections only because I have tapped into that myself only recently.
Right.
And I love talking about it. I love getting to know people in that way because it's something that people don't talk about as often. And I feel like if that's something we had when we were younger, maybe students would have understood where their passions were.
Right.
Not only in their creative side or in the academic side, but an emotional side.
And even a spiritual side as well.
Spiritual side as well.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that has allowed me to open up doors of understanding what it is that I enjoy without having the constructs of pressures of family and past and needing an employment.
Right.
Allowing yourself to let go of all of that and just being present with yourself and understanding, but what is it really that you want?
Right.
Because that's something that everyone's struggling with, because mm-hmm. they have the pressures of, you need to find that course, you need to find that grade, you need to find that good university degree. But what is it that you actually want is a question that all students are asking. And I think it's because they're not able to connect with their emotional, spiritual side of themselves, mm-hmm. allowing themselves to uncover their traumas or uncover their gaps and allowing themselves to heal, to give them space to understand what it is that they want to do.
Right.
It could be something I'm far-fetched on, but I really do feel like that would help a lot of people.
Yeah. I would agree, because it's like once you're a teenager, I'm just trying to put myself in my teenage self. You know what? I think that I really needed that. And I think I needed that because there was so much pressure. And whenever you ask students, oh, why are you doing this? It's always for a job.
Yeah, I'm telling
you. It's always for a job.
I seek tutoring just because I wanted to be at the same place as everyone else. I was scared of failing.
Right.
I was scared of being, of falling behind. I was scared of having my parents feel like I was less than.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much pressure for me to not even realize what I wanted to be. If you can let go of everything,
mm-hmm.
if you had no pressure, what would you be?
Mm-hmm.
What would you be?
Yeah.
Anyhow, I think I'm going to just leave it with that. That's mental health for you.
I guess maybe to just summarize all of that, it's not to say that the public education system isn't doing anything to solve this problem, but rather that, for one, you know, the presence of a psychologist is still a big gap. that they're making small investments into culturally responsive responses like mental health in the Tamil community. I think it was around a $50,000 investment.
Mm-hmm.
Significant, and it's a step in the right direction. However, when the infrastructure of a school isn't fixed, like providing smaller classroom sizes, like creating a curriculum that's culturally responsive instead of just having culturally responsive mental health resources, we're once again reacting to symptoms of a problem that's more deeply rooted. And so with Roots Roots Academy, we're creating a course for grade 9 students that's culturally relevant in mathematics, as we see that this is the biggest gap within our communities, where you're left looking at different mathematicians like Pythagorean, like Newton, and wondering, where on earth do I fit here? And we want to have students to have the opportunity to refine their mathematical skills, but also to have the chance to see where they belong. And definitely wholeheartedly believing that once they see where they belong, then those fears that lead to the spiraling of mental health challenges, that leads to those IEPs, those ILPs, that they will be able to have the environments where we could finally see how does the student shine.
Because they have reflected on who they are as an individual. Everyone's experience is different, and being able to reflect upon their life experiences, mend those fears that they've had before, and have that space to allow them to explore these options and to feel like they belong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is.
Yeah. And by understanding where they belong as an individual, being able to contribute with more meaning
to a society,
to their communities, to their passions, and to create an impact, real change. So that's our hope.
And those are our dreams.
Yeah. And I mean, to end, I do want to note that I am wearing this FIFA World Cup. Alfonso Davies, just wanted to say that was a really good goal. And although we didn't win, just still wanted to shout you out on this podcast.
Anyway. Well done, sir.
Just wanted to slide that in there.
Thank you, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
If you liked this episode and would like to learn more, you can find the transcript and related blog posts on our website, roots2roots.ca.
You can also subscribe to this series on Spotify or wherever else you prefer to listen to your favorite podcasts.
At Roots to Roots Academy, we offer high school credit programs for public school students because we believe that students from all cultural backgrounds deserve an education that is relevant to their personal interests, academic aspirations, and cultural values.
We are rooted in the belief that educating parents about the education system provides more roots for their child's future.
So, don't be a stranger. We will love to get to know you. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok to share your thoughts about this episode and to receive updates on our new content.
I'm Karina Thomas Reynolds.
I'm Ramya Seladurai.
And together, we're the co-founders of Roots to Roots Academy. Thank you for listening.
And until next time, take care.